This is Twit.
This past Wednesday, a lot of you have heard, we went and it came and went, and the whole internet-wide day of action to save net neutrality to oppose the FCC's plan to remove Title II. We had a flood of platforms, small and large, that came and went in the movement, and this included Twitter, Reddit, Netflix, Spotify, Mozilla, Amazon, Yelp, and SoundCloud, along with a vast array of online communities from every corner of the internet, gaming forums, YouTube creators, subreddits. They displayed prominent protest messages on their users, encouraging them to take action by acting on or contacting FCC as well as Congress through their tools like battleforthenet.com that make it easier for internet users to make their voices heard. So let's go over some of the movements, what actually happened on this event, and what's still happening, actually. So essentially, tens of millions of people saw the protest messages on participating websites, as well as over a million emails to Congress, over 5 million emails to Congress, and it's actually still going. They're still being delivered over time. More than 2 million comments to the FCC, which nearly tripled since back in September 2014 when they removed some of these items. Of course, there was also over 124,000 phone calls to Congress. The net neutrality hashtag trended on Facebook and Twitter. Protesters went in person to the more than 20 congressional offices, and more than 125,000 websites, people's artists, online creators all signed up to participate, as well as a bunch of celebrities, Pearl Jam, Wilco, Tim Robbins, Susan Sarandon. There was also a broad participation in every corner of the internet from online gaming communities and so on. Also, Facebook and Dropbox, the three largest internet companies, as well as Google, came out and publicly with strong statements in support of the current FCC rules. And this is pretty significant, especially since Facebook's previous opposition to certain net neutralities rules were kind of in effect. So we all know that FCC Chairman Ajit Pai appears dead on set with going forward with the proposal, and he and Commissioner Mike O'Reilly have opposed the 2015 rules, calling them antiquated and stifling to business investment. And they've both repeated stating their intent to dismantle them. Pai also admitted in a speech introducing his proposal, it would be a fight, but he also said it would be a fight to intend to win and, you know, what he's going to do going forward. So Cheever, what do we expect from Pai here and his team?
Well, instead of me trying to interpret things, and this is a shout out to JJ to the 4884 who pointed this out to me the other day. I'm going to read a PBS interview done by Judy Woodruff and William Brangden with the FCC chair Ajit Pai. Now, keep in mind, I am reading this. I'm not interpreting. I'm not coloring this. I don't agree. But I think we ought to give the opposing opinion a little bit of airtime. William Brangden, so you, I understand, are not a fan of these net neutrality rules from a few years ago. What is your principal concern? Ajit Pai, well, I favor a free and open internet, as I think most consumers do. My concern is with the particular regulations that the FCC adopted 2 years ago. They are what is called Title II regulations developed in the 1930s to regulate the mobile telephony monopoly. And my concern is that by imposing those heavy-handed economic regulations on internet service providers, big and small, we could end up de-incentivizing companies from wanting to build out internet access to a lot of parts of the country in low-income urban and rural areas, for example. And that, I think, is something that no one would benefit from. William Brangden, is there evidence, though, that these rules have de-incentivized those companies? There are. Businesses are doing very, very well. They're spending billions on the spectrum. Ajit Pai, there is a significant evidence that investment in infrastructure has gone down since the adoption of these rules. For example, there is a study by a highly respected economist that says that among the top 12 internet service providers in terms of size, investment is down by 5.6% or several billion dollars over the last 2 years. And among smaller providers as well, just literally this week, 22 internet service providers with 1,000 customers or less told us that these Title II regulations have kept them from getting the financing that they need to build out their networks. And as they put it, these net neutrality regulations hang like a black cloud over our businesses. And so what we're trying to do going forward is figure out a way that we can preserve that free and open internet that consumers want and need, and preserve that incentive to invest in the network that will ultimately benefit even more customers going forward. William Brangnan, I know there is a whole group of other internet companies, Facebook, Google, Instagram, those types of companies that have said to you, these rules are not a hindrance to us. We have been able to thrive and survive under these rules. Don't change them. What do you say to them when they argue this to you? Ajit Pai. Well, two different points. First, if you look carefully, a lot of these companies don't say that they like Title II specifically, these particular regulations. What they say is that they care about the principles of free and open internet. And so I actually think there is a decent amount of common ground here. And it's just a matter of finding the appropriate legal framework to reach that common ground. But the second point I would like to make is because these companies are the best evidence of the success of the light touch regulatory framework that originated in the Clinton administration, and that's something I favor. Well, this is actually starting to get kind of long, but it boils down to there are two sides of every argument. I don't particularly agree with Ajit Pai, but I also see some of his points. I am in favor of light touch. I feel the market should drive a lot of things, but I want the government to make sure that we don't somehow or another create a giant monopoly that can do whatever they want, like we had in the days of the Ma Bell monopoly. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, it's interesting because even on Wednesday, I won't name any companies, but I think there's a lot of companies out there, including some ISPs, that kind of showed their, I guess, almost their hand in some sense, where they attempted to convince people that they were kind of going towards or agreeing with net neutrality, some of the net neutrality parts. But in fact, they were just kind of pushing people to think that they are. Some agree with what they call a two-sided market, which basically means they want to be able to charge their customers for both internet access and the websites they actually go out and reach. And so implicitly, this means that, of course, they can essentially block websites that can't or won't pay the fees that they expect, and which would essentially limit the universe of sites that a user can access. They also said that they will be able to charge web companies for the priority access, either in the form of exemption or user data caps. And this essentially would be make it more expensive for even things like startup companies and people who are just trying to get into that, especially if they can't afford the paid prioritization. So I think that this is going to have a huge effect, I think, if they don't go back. In fact, one of the key protections from the 2015 rules was the general conduct standard. And this is just the internet is a constantly evolving technology. And it's an ecosystem. And if the rules essentially are guidelines and principles to address any additional or new threats that come over time. And it's so by design, it gives the FCC and the public a process for evolving the protections as the markets and technology evolve. So, Cheaper, is this the first thing to go? And why is it because it's too big government, or what's going on here?
It's hard. There's an amazing number of opinions, and JJ, is pointing out there's a lot of different sides to this. Ajit Pai keeps forgetting a lot of things about how overbuilt the network is and how heavy-handed some of the ISPs have been on, things like throttling and all that. Just the very fact that a lot of consumers will go out and it'll get really, really, really slow, and they finally complain, and magically, once enough people complain, the pipes start freeing up. From a consumer standpoint, that starts feeling like, wait, why didn't they do that at the beginning? Do the ISPs have too much power? Why did things like zero rating become such a big deal? It is not an easy yes or no answer. There's lots and lots of shades of gray. I personally think there needs to be some government control in there, some government oversight. But I'd really like to see the market push the direction rather than big giant knobs that the government turns and one size fits all solution. That's my biggest fear. I don't want a one size fit all solution because the world is not one size fits all.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the problem, especially with these rules, is that, you know, our, you know, future practices, you know, could cause harm. And to, you know, especially to any of the rules that they were intended to address, and they're not necessarily addressing anymore. And this is even a quote from the FCC. It says, our future practices could cause the type of harms our rules are intended to address. For that reason, we adopt a rule setting forth a no unreasonable interference disadvantage standard. So it almost creates a bit of uncertainty about what's allowed or what's not. In fact, you know, if you think about it, rules and technology, for especially for specific technology, they go obsolete really fast. And so and you can't always be too nebulous. Like you said, uncertainty makes investment riskier. So to me, the SEC got it right here back in net neutrality days. You know, ISPs have deep pockets and they can always find loopholes. So I think we need to find a way to help them out here. Cheebert, you know, it sounds like if the SEC goes one way, it seems like, you know, Congress might even have to weigh in here. Is it time to get the word out for how you feel?
I'm not sure. You know, I've been in government and I know how slow it can move. What I really want is things like, let's try this and say if it doesn't make a difference in 6 months, a year, whatever, that it should automatically just die and we go back. I don't think there's good answers yet. I don't think I've heard a really, really good argument either for or against. W.A. Wisp in the ISP was mentioning that he's a small ISP and he opposes net neutrality. Did I say that right? Yeah, he says he opposes net neutrality. Besides the regulatory burden being ridiculous, I want to be able to shape traffic to provide better service to my customers. So there are definitely two sides to this argument, and I don't, like I said previously, I don't want big knobs. I want little knobs that the government can use to encourage things and to try things out. And if it really doesn't work, for those rules to automatically die, so we don't have to have, you know, lots and lots of debate about things. No, it doesn't work. Sorry, let it go. So W.A. Wisp, what do you think? Should we have encouraging regulations that if they don't work, they automatically die? Who knows? What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take. And in fact, one question back to you. I'm curious actually. Is what do you think is the least understood issue around net neutrality? Like, if there's, you know, people understand one part of it, but they don't understand the other part, and that might be the part that we're actually getting rid of. So do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think the most misunderstood portion is the general public has this attitude that, oh, everything should be free and open and we should have no throttling, we should have no traffic shaping. No, I'm sorry. Traffic shaping is necessary. You know, if you have someone that's doing, you know, things like streaming video is based on typically on UDP technology, which is a Hail Mary. Just go throw it out there. It's the fire hose. But the problem is, we might have e-commerce that's running over HTTP, which is TCP based, which is a more polite transport technology that will back off during congestion. So there needs to be some throttling so that the people watching kitten videos don't overwhelm the people that are trying to make a living on the internet. So yeah, we need some, and that's really, really, really misunderstood. You know, you talk to Joe whoever off the street, and they'll always tell you, oh, throttling's bad, throttling's bad. No, throttling's good. We just need to better understand it, and people need to work with the ISPs, not automatically do knee-jerk reactions.
Right. Right. I think, you know, to me, the biggest misunderstanding is between, the difference between legal jurisdiction, and that's basically created the rules of net neutrality, and the rules themselves. So like, for instance, The legal jurisdiction for the rules as they stand now are known as the Title II. But it's important to remember that Title II is just the legal jurisdiction the FCC is using for the current rules, and essentially the ones that that are ban blocking, throttling papers. But they're not the rules themselves. So think of Title II as essentially the means to the end and not the end in itself. We could, however, end up in a world where the FCC uses Title II to create the net neutrality rules that actually didn't protect net neutrality. For example, the FCC could use Title II and still allow ISPs to use paid prioritization or throttling. So this is an important point, sometimes overlooked, and so we always should probably focus on what the end rules are that protect net neutrality. So there's a really great question in the chat about, you know, what can the FTC do to enforce strong neutrality rules, just like the FCC is doing. And so the interesting thing here is that, you know, the FTC itself, they don't really have any authority here to make rules. And if there are new threats on the internet emerging, they can't really do squat. The FCC has the authority to address new anti-competitive practices, and they have engineers and experts on their team, but the FCC has that, but the FTC does not. So unlike the FCC, the FTC tries to act to correct actions, something like that, either by doing it itself or asking companies to do lawsuits. They don't always take action very well. For instance, like imagine a startup is required to pay access fees, if they don't, they'll be put as a disadvantage on the internet. And in fact, if you think about it, on average, a startup essentially launches with maybe $75,000 to about $300,000 outside funding. And to me, that's nowhere near enough amount of money to actually go and fight lawsuits against big companies like Comcast and Verizon. So, and in fact, those types of lawsuits would take you years to do. So, you know, I think, you know, here's a philosophical question back to you, Cheebert. You know, net neutrality, you know, was it huge before 2015? How did we get to this point, actually? How did we actually get here?
Asleep at the wheel. Not sure how we got here. Tom Wheeler certainly had a lot to do with where we got started. Truth be told, I want to feel like it's when we started, the first company started playing the zero rating game, is when people stood up and said, hey, what, huh? How come someone can go to the front of the line just by paying money? So in my opinion, that's how it started. You know, maybe someone in the chat room was paying a little more attention to it. I was busy trying to be an academic.